Shares. Market.
The S&P.
The ASX.
Stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that really, really wants more people to take up investing. I'm Scott Phillips, and with me is, well, not Anir Bhan Mahanty this week, but a very special guest. And a special guest for a few reasons. Firstly, it's the first special guest we've had from outside the Motley Fool. And secondly, because this is the first female voice we've brought you on Motley Fool Money, and it's about bloody time. Welcome to Bronwyn Bruce, who blogs as Miss Moneybox.
Hi, Scott.
Thank you for joining us. Now, I've asked Bronwyn to join us, and she graciously agreed, because getting women to invest, getting them started, is kind of one of my passions, the passion of the Motley Fool, and kind of, we've never really done it well. So we're going to try and find out from Bronwyn exactly what we're doing wrong, what you can do better, and if you have women in your life, how you can help them invest as well. So Bronwyn, thank you again for joining us. Let's kick off. So it's been going for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It's www.missmoneybox.com.au. But what is it?
So it's a blog that tries to simplify money. I felt like in the world out there was just too much noise and it was a bit too complicated. And women should be able to invest. They're great savers, but not so great at investing.
Better than blokes at saving, I reckon, too, just quietly.
Yeah, I think so.
And so what have you, what's the focus? How have you kind of gone about delivering that sort of stuff for people who read your blog?
So I read a lot about money and personal finance, and one of my skills is simplifying content.
Nice.
So I just take things that I think are really difficult to process, and sometimes it takes a few days for me to get to the point of it and write it as a very simple blog post. So, for example, I wrote something about the First Home Super Saver Scheme.
That was very good, just quietly.
Oh, thank you. It took me days to get my head around that, to be honest.
Man.
It was super complicated. And then I tried to break it down into just 500 words. So if anyone wanted to actually try and get involved in that and buy their first home by using the scheme, then hopefully a post like that can help them.
All right, there you go, folks. We've delivered more value in 5 seconds than we've delivered in about, 100 podcasts, Liam. So if you want to find out more about the First Home Super Saver Scheme, I think that's what it's called, jump on Miss Moneybox and have a look. It is a stupidly complex piece of legislation and policy, but Bronwyn has done a great job breaking it down, so start there. All right, so women in investing, yeah. So here's the thing. There's no reason why women shouldn't be investing,
mm-hmm.
but they tend on average, and these are all averages, right? So we won't get too bogged down in, it's not going to describe every man or every woman or every investor. Why are women, so if I take a step back, if I think about investing, right? If I'm going to make money owning a particular company or owning an ETF or whatever I'm doing, it kind of doesn't, there's no male skill. I don't pass go because I'm male. The shares don't know who owns them. It's not like they're going to say, well, I'm owned by a male or a female, therefore I'm going to go up or down more.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it should be something that, at least theoretically, is a very non-gendered pursuit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why aren't more women investing?
There are a number of reasons. It goes back a long way. So for a start, women have lower financial literacy than men. And this is not because women are dumb. It's just due to a lack of education, traditional female gender roles. Mm. And generally, literacy increases with the amount of money you have. So
okay.
I think there needs to be policy efforts to build literacy amongst women.
Right.
And that needs to involve education. And the problem also with literacy is, like, you can start with literacy.
Mm.
But then you need to get to capability.
Okay.
And to get there, you need the motivation.
All right. So let me break this down before you keep going a little bit. So financial literacy, on one level, I'm thinking to myself, well, hang on. We all went to the same schools. We all kind of had the same opportunities to attend the same courses. There shouldn't be necessarily a gendered reason why women are less financially literate than men.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I agree with you, by the way, it's the case. So if you're going to, you talk about policy outcomes or policy decisions, what would you change in the sense that we've all got the same potential access to these things?
Yeah.
What is it that's stopping women leaving school or at whatever age being less financially literate than men?
Women need to have their confidence built up around financial stuff.
Okay.
So there's a sort of, in personal finance circles, famous literacy quiz.
Right.
Three questions done by two professors in the States. So Anna Maria Lusardi and Olivia Mitchell. And it's just three questions that measure financial literacy.
Mm-hmm.
Women will often answer, I don't know, rather than actually giving it a go.
Yeah.
And I think that's a confidence thing.
Yeah.
So in order to build literacy, we need to build confidence.
Mm-hmm. My take is that there's some sense that that's kind of a thing in life, right? Like, I know most blokes, and this is a horrible generalization, and we're going to generalize a lot. So listeners will have to bear with this, and feel free, by the way, to call me out when I'm getting those generalizations wrong.
Okay.
But as a matter of course, there's the stereotype that a bloke will apply for a job that he's completely unqualified for and try and bullshit his way, if I can use that term, through the interview and try and get the job.
Yes.
A woman will be entirely qualified for the job and think, there's probably better candidates out there, I won't apply.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the root of this, do you think, from a financial literacy perspective as well, or is there other stuff at play?
I actually think you've probably hit the nail on the head there. We have this whole imposter syndrome thing going on with women.
Explain imposter syndrome for a sec.
So it's this constant voice in your head that's like, I'm not good enough to be here. I'm not good enough to go for that job.
Right.
I don't know what I'm talking about in the share market. I don't know anything about stocks. Mm. So it's just this thing. I don't know why, but it's a thing that's always there in the back of your mind.
Right.
I have it right now. What am I doing on the radio talking about investing and literacy?
You're making me sound good is what you're doing, Robert. So keep going, because it's the best podcast we've had, and we're only a couple of minutes in so far.
Okay.
So is that the imposter syndrome idea, the lack of kind of willingness to put yourself forward, to believe in yourself? Do you think is that in education as well? Like, how far back do we have to go? How early do we have to go in women's lives to kind of pick this up? Is it women not doing high school maths to a large enough degree, or applying for commerce or economics courses at high school? Is it a university thing? Is it simply sitting around the table talking about money at home? How do we address the lack of confidence, how do we solve the imposter syndrome? Where do we need to start? Where do we need to finish? How does that work?
I think it starts very young. Socialization starts very young for girls. And in respect to money, I think one of the big drivers of being financially literate and having the confidence to invest in all of these things is driven by parents. They're the big influences in money and being able to do that stuff. So
you were telling me a story before the podcast. I'll ask you to repeat. You're saying you spoke to someone who had some brothers. Would you mind telling me that story for our listeners?
Yeah, so I met this woman. She would have been, I don't know, late 20s, early 30s, and she had just started investing. And she said, she told her two brothers that she started investing, and they said, oh, yeah, we've been doing that for 10 years. And she was like, how did these conversations happen all around me in my family? And right. I've missed them completely.
And was it a family conversation in the end? Was it kind of the parents and kids that talked about it, or just the brothers talked amongst themselves?
I don't know. She doesn't know.
Isn't that amazing? So the brothers had both been, or I assume those two, they've been investing.
Yeah.
And knew each other were investing, but had never bothered talking to their sister about it.
Never, ever.
That's bizarre.
And that's, you know, like I was talking to you before about this. So in my family, my father... he was very proactive in teaching me about investing, mostly because he just wanted me to tell him the closing prices of his shares at the end of the day.
You were on newspaper duty, were you?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, every day I have to ring him up, 4 o'clock. All right, what was the high? What was the low? What was the closing?
All right. So before you keep going with that story, I'm gonna take you back a bit. So tell me the Brom and Bruce story. This is obviously part of how you got to investing, but kind of. You are, unfortunately for most women, you are unusual in the sense that you are an investor. You are interested in investing in money. You've made yourself financially literate. Just give the listeners a bit of your backstory, if you like. Was that the beginning? Was it your dad saying, hey, what are the closing prices? Is that how you started in investing?
No, my dad's been banging on to me about money for years. So he's actually a huge influence on my life.
Nice.
So as has been my mother, but with the investing stuff, it's been my dad.
Strike one for the dads of girls. Awesome. That's cool.
Yeah, I remember when, you know, I would probably been like 7 or 8 going to the shops on a Sunday, and, you know, your reward for doing the chores for the week was you can have a bag of chips. And my dad said to me, all right, do you want to continue to have a bag of chips, or would you like me to give you $1? And I'm like, I want the chips. And he's like, but if you have the dollar, you have the change left over.
Hey, there you go.
And then you can buy more chips. So, you know, as a kid, that really appealed to me.
Yeah, I bet. That's a good start.
So that's, you know, from a young age. Mm. And then, like, he supported me doing a lot of crazy things. You know, I used to sell things at school and with a markup. I was into all sorts of stuff.
That's a very Warren Buffett thing to do. You know, you used to buy a 6-pack of Coke for 25 cents and sell them for a dime each. Nickel, yeah. Whichever one it is. You used to make money doing that. There you go, in the steps of Warren Buffett.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so you were selling breaking up drinks, selling them at school. What came next?
And then came the share market stuff.
Okay.
So I actually had no idea what I was doing.
Right.
You know, I didn't. He's like, "What's steel and tube today?" I'm like, "I don't know." Here you go, 105, 106.
Okay. Was that his way of getting you to kind of get familiar with it, do you think, or he just wanted you to know?
I think Dad just wanted to know.
That's got some good side effects.
Yeah, but it actually worked. And then when I got into my mid-20s and I thought I need to start taking control of my money situation, I didn't want to buy a house. A, it's too expensive. B, I didn't know where I was going to be.
Right.
And the idea of, you know, investing in property just freaked me out. So I thought, I'll buy some shares.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was it kind of the kernel that your dad had planted those years earlier to kind of open your eyes to the possibility of it? Because some people would be ask themselves those questions. If I don't want to buy a house, I can't really afford it, I don't really know what to do, so I'll do nothing. That, you know, I share, and guys as well, but largely women, that sense of kind of I don't know enough to do shares at all. So even if I heard about it, I still wouldn't do it because I don't know anything about it. What got you across the line to making that decision for yourself?
I just didn't want my money sitting in a bank account earning pittance interest.
Nice.
It bothered me.
Yeah.
And I think this happens with a lot of women. You know, they're great savers, and because at school and at home they're taught how to save, but they're not really taught how to invest. And they have this issue with security. Like, so men, and generalization here, they want to make money. They want to build wealth. Little girls aren't brought up to go, "Oh, I want my capital to rise." You know, I want to be mega rich like Warren Buffett. Right. We're not like that.
Well, it's almost one of those gendered kind of, and in a very, very discriminatory kind of stereotypical way, there's kind of that idea of, you know, men are leaders, women are bossy, that kind of idea. It's like...
Bossy is the worst word.
Right, right. So in the sense of finance, kind of like men want to be rich, but then women who want money are just kind of somehow, it's not exactly looked down on, but it's not exactly encouraged, right? Whereas if a little boy wants to do it, it's like, yeah, you go and be a master of the universe, you go and kind of do that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of does start that young, really, doesn't
it? Yeah. Yeah. Women are not taught to...
Yeah.
Want to gain wealth.
Yeah, right, right. So you mentioned literacy and then capability.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me kind of in that context, what is it about capability that, how does literacy become capability, and what needs to happen for that to kind of take place and be and take root for women in their investing lives?
So it's kind of an equation. So it's literacy plus motivation equals financial capability.
Hey, write that one down, fools. Literacy plus motivation is capability. I like that. Okay, that's cool.
And to get to capability, you need to be given the skills, the education, and also there needs to be quality products and services available so that women can actually start in this process of investing.
Only there was a blog called missmoneybox.com.au where women could go and build their financial capability. That'd be a wonderful thing. So if you do happen to jump on, look, I'm going to stop here just for a second because what I didn't start with is why I actually asked you to come on in the first place. And a lot of our listeners, you know what, I would speculate that a decent number of our listeners are blokes because most investors are blokes, most of our members are blokes. It kind of follows, and to your exact point, that's kind of the reality. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be some guys listening to us right now who are thinking, well, what's in it for me? Why am I even listening to this? And I'll answer that. I'm not going to ask you to answer it because it's not fair to ask you to answer it. The reason I asked you to come on was because it's incredibly important that for all of the men listening and the women listening, obviously, hopefully it's useful just straight out. But for the blokes listening, it's about the people in your lives that you know, the women in your lives, the sisters, mothers, girlfriends, daughters, nieces, neighbors. You know, these are the challenges that as blokes we don't see. You know, we don't face those sort of problems, so we're never really conscious of them. And frankly, as I said when we started the podcast, I've long wanted to try and get more women involved in investing. I don't know the answers to how to do that, but I do know that women are actually better investors. The research says that women are better at this than we are. So kind of maybe I'm doing myself out of a job, I'm not sure. But in any case, that kind of idea that, you know, there are women in your lives that need to hear these messages. So if you take nothing from this podcast other than, you know what, I need to make sure the women in my life get the opportunity that Bronwyn's talking about to actually find a way to get involved in investing and take some tips from this. You know, give some of this information to those women and say, here's what's going on. Here's what Bronwyn says you should try and do. Here's a resource. Go and have a look. Just get them exposed to it. Get them started. Help them understand there is real value there and there's worth there, right? For all of the negative connotations about investing that women may have been brought up with or have now, Some of those probably are real, quite frankly, but a large majority aren't. And for all of us, and I have a mother, a sister, I have nieces, you know, for all of those things, that it's just so, so incredibly relevant. So if you're a bloke listening to this and saying, what's in it for me? The answer is your chance to help out a relative, a friend, someone else who can really benefit, quite frankly, from this. And I will say too, if you think about some of the way that women invest and why they're successful, if no other reason, there's a selfish reason for you blokes, which is you'll learn something as to how to be a more successful investor by doing it. So that's my quick ad.
Great.
Roman, you talked about the financial literacy and capability. We've talked a little bit about some of the reasons that women aren't investing.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the more specific challenges that women face when it comes to investing? What's either keeping them away from investing or, frankly, stopping them from being not as successful necessarily, but building as much wealth as some of their male counterparts do?
So it's something that you said earlier. It's such a masculine industry.
And surely not.
It's really excluding women,
yeah,
unintentionally. And it's kind of a legacy thing. You know, men have always kind of fallen into these finance type jobs. And women are getting into them and it's happening. I can see it. It's amazing. But it's such a masculine industry. And even
guilty, Your Honor.
The language just drives me nuts.
So tell me about some of that.
So it's all about war and construction and, like, you need to build your portfolio and the Dow fought its way to the top, you know. I read this great piece about that, and it was written by a woman, and she said, why wouldn't you knit your portfolio?
That's a really good point.
I mean, it's a good enough word, right?
Yeah.
But
it's actually more useful than build, actually, because it kind of has that almost a 3D kind of, yeah, connotation to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's the language. And I think a lot of the ways that people invest in getting into it and the platforms that have been designed, they're so unfriendly. I mean, women are 85% of the consumer. Like, they do 85% of purchasing decisions, right? We know how to shop. So you try and buy shares.
Yeah.
How hard is it?
That's actually pretty true.
It's really hard.
Yeah. Designed kind of by men, not even necessarily directly for men, but almost by definition, because if you have a system and a process and a site and a whatever designed by blokes, you're kind of going to get that as a result, right?
Yeah. I mean, I went to buy an exchange-traded fund in the US and I had to fax something.
Oh, no.
I was like, who designed this?
That's pretty cool. I don't remember the last time I wouldn't know where to find a fax machine. I'd probably go to my local chemist, I guess. I don't know. Where do they happen these days?
I don't know. Officeworks.
Where did you find Officeworks? Yeah, okay. That makes sense. All right. So the industry is very male dominated.
Mm-hmm.
The sites aren't very friendly.
Yep.
Are there any other specific challenges that women confront when it comes to investing?
Yeah, there's the one huge challenge is risk. So women are hugely more risk averse than men. In fact, there's a study from the University of Melbourne that says 60% of women are unprepared to take on financial risk.
Right.
And when you see things on the news like, you know, the ASX tanked or we're heading for a crash, you're like,
$48 billion wiped off the stock market.
Right. And when you earn, what is the pay gap at the moment? You know, when you earn
82, 85 cents
on the male dollar,
right,
and you live 5 years longer, your money actually means a lot to you.
Right, right.
So am I going to throw it into the stock market, which is going to tank?
Yeah.
I just don't think I'm not me, but
yeah.
I think women are like, they don't want to do that. And because they have different values to men, they want the security. They want to provide for their families. They want to leave a legacy.
Mm.
It's not about, you know, like Warren Buffett creating millions and millions and billions of dollars.
The richest person on earth.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that a risk tolerance thing. I think I want to kind of break that down a little bit. Is it a case of women not being comfortable with the risk they're taking, or is it that they perceive the risk differently? So you and I would know from our respective histories that the stock market is volatile, but over time compounds enormously.
Yeah.
And there are blokes as well as women who see the volatility as risk and will simply walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an education piece there to say, yes, it's volatile, but doesn't make it risky in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a case of simply even that volatility is simply, so we need to work on risk tolerance or education when it comes to helping women invest?
Education.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think, and that's what I try and write about in my blog as well. Mm. It's not about you need to invest and you need to just, you know, sell your shares when they tank or go low or whatever.
Right.
Women need to understand that the stock market will rise and fall.
Mm.
You just have to ride that wave. And sometimes to understand risk, you might even have to try and buy some shares and you might fail, which is a scary thing. But it's just something that it's an education piece, definitely.
Okay. And how do we do that? You mentioned some policy, you referred to a policy prescription earlier without kind of giving any more detail. You kind of talked a little bit about helping educate women. If you were in charge of everything, if you were king for the world, or queen for the day, or you were the prime minister, you were in charge of education. How would you give us the Bronwyn Bruce, the Miss Money Box version of improving women's financial literacy and capability? Have you got a couple of points in mind? You'd kind of say, either for the system itself, or even for the women and men listening, go and do these things.
If I was queen for a day,
yes.
I would change the way that the financial industry speaks.
Okay.
Like I said before.
So to make it more accessible?
Totally more accessible.
Okay.
I'm just trying to think of what I would do. Yeah, I've never been asked if I would be queen for a day before. The power's gone to my head.
Today's your lucky day. Exactly. You think about who am I going to have killed and who am I going to... let me ask you a different way. So if you think about... Is it a policy prescription in terms of, or is there a policy prescription in terms of the education system, or in terms of is it something governments should or could do, education systems could or should do to help that? How would you go about trying to fix that part, if at all?
I think people talk a lot about children at school not learning about money, and it's true. Mm. You know, I learned about Pythagoras. And then knew nothing about...
A squared plus B squared equals C squared, like, as I recall.
That's totally relevant to my life.
What about differentiation of functions or something? Was that... I think I learned that.
Sine and cosine.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Totally valuable to my life. And then, you know, but compounding, which is something that is very valuable to my life, especially when I'm young, when, you know, you could save, you know... It doesn't have to be a lot of money, $10 a week, and then you earn the interest on the interest, and the next thing you know, you've got a nice little pot of money. So we don't learn that in school. Well, I didn't learn that in school. Mm. But the literature does say that most of our money habits and skills are learned at home.
Okay.
And it's, I don't know, it's kind of a hard one to answer.
Yeah.
Because especially if you've got, and in my family, it was mum handles the budget.
Yeah.
And dad's off speculating on the stock market in all families. Who knows what?
No, I think it's pretty common. It does strike me that, you know, it's again, a stereotype, but it seems to be reasonably true in my experience that women pay the bills and the blokes do the investing. And certainly our members will say something similar a lot of the time as well.
Yeah. And I think if my dad had not had two daughters and if he'd had a son, I would have missed the conversations.
Like, so you're the son he never had, really, were you?
I did a lot of manual labour for my father.
At least you got some investing education as a result. That's not a bad quid pro quo.
And I'm very good at chopping firewood.
Oh, good, because I've got someone I need to have cuddle. I'll get you down.
Not happening.
No, okay. So it seems to me, if I'm going to kind of interpret what I think I hear you say, it's kind of the mums and dads listening here, or those people who haven't got kids, but when they become parents, that kind of need to take responsibility to make sure that their daughters get the same education that their sons would get or would otherwise get if they had sons. It feels like let me ask you, rather than me saying this.
Okay.
What should mums and dads be doing for their daughters to help them kind of get across? Is it just having the conversations at home? Is it kind of giving them an expectation that, is it breaking down the walls of gendered roles, for example, saying, you know, the boys aren't the leaders and the girls aren't the doll players. It's do what you want to do, a bit of everything, and kind of get exposure to it. Is it that it's okay to be kind of to want to compound your money? Is it giving those lessons about what that's worth? Do you have a sense?
I think it's all of those things. Okay. And I think it's allowing your children to see you doing things with money.
Okay.
I mean, they might not be interested, but you could give it a go. You know, like I always saw my mum, she always had a checkbook out and all the money.
Yeah, right.
On the kitchen table. I don't know if that happens in most families.
You know what I like about that? I don't know if it's true or not, and it makes me wonder, but my old man used to have remember the old tobacco tins? He wasn't a smoker, but he had these old tobacco tins that were years old, and he actually would have one for petrol and one for clothes and one for electricity. And I can vividly see him with the tins out on his bed at home, and he'd be putting the money, getting the paycheck and putting the money, you know, well, not paycheck, it was literally the pay packet, putting the money in the individual tins. It was $20 for petrol and $10 for clothes and whatever kind of get out. And that was the way of budgeting. That kind of, maybe there's something to that.
My mum had a coffee jar. So it's very, very similar.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It might be about letting children see that, and not just restricting the more risky conversations to the boys. Mm. I don't know if that happens. It didn't happen in my house.
Yeah,
but it could be something. I don't know. Mm. Look, it's a big question. I'm still trying to find the answer.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever will.
Well, what I like is you're doing a lot to try and help that with your blog, and that's kind of cool. And every little bit helps. I know we've at the Motley Fool, like we're pretty dedicated to equality and to diversity and that kind of stuff. And I have to say, despite that, our entire investment team is male, and frankly, all but I think one of us is of a Caucasian background. And so, kind of, we are the stereotype, despite kind of. As a business, we want to be different. Like we're actively saying, you know, I made a point of interviewing every woman applicant we've had because I want to make sure we give them the chance and kind of overcome some of those unconscious biases. But we're still having that problem of not getting enough candidates through, let alone people in the roles and all that kind of stuff. So maybe the problem is we're trying to fight it as blokes, realizing that maybe we're not going to be able to break through to women because we really don't know how to do it well, how to do it properly. Maybe it's, I don't know how you do it. If women aren't doing it, you can't use them as examples. But if you can't use them as examples, maybe they won't do it.
Yeah.
Is it quotas? Is it kind of is there a way to do it?
I think it's important to get women involved in working in financial services industry. Sheryl Sandberg.
Yes.
Facebook. Her book Lean In. So, you know, it's all about you have to be a bit more. Women have to be a bit more aggressive in going after what they want.
Right.
That's not a typical trait that I feel like I possess.
Okay.
But there's also this other school of thought that says men should lean back.
Right. Okay. Nice.
It's kind of like maybe what you're doing at the Motley Fool. Like you're making sure you're trying to get women in.
Mm,
mm. I don't know about other financial services companies if that's what they're doing.
Mm.
But if you just lean back and give them the space to, you know, apply for a job and even just interview them.
Mm, mm.
I don't know if it's about quotas, although I think quotas are good.
Mm.
Yeah. We have to lean in, but men have to lean back.
Yeah, and I think that's and we kind of get into a little bit of a political thing and philosophical thing, and frankly, I'm a fan of exactly what you said, and we'll have people listening with different views, but I think that's kind of right. Like, there's some sense that guys got to have to make room, right? Like, I saw a funny thing, and this gets a little bit political, and I won't worry about political parties and stuff, but there was one sense that kind of someone was saying that quotas can't work because it's got to be on merit.
Right.
And the response to that was, well, on what basis do you think women don't have sufficient merit to make up half of parliamentarians?
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of exactly the perfect response, right? It's like, yes, merit should count, but if you genuinely believe as a bloke or as a woman that somehow women shouldn't merit half of the roles, there's nothing biologically different, there's no sense that they shouldn't do that. So by definition, if that's not working, then that's kind of the very problem in and of itself. And that kind of struck me as a really good point. Although I do think with investing, as we said, part of the problem is if you spend none of your early life and you know, even later teen years being involved, learning, being educated, you're kind of starting a long way back, right, for most women. If they've got to start at 20-something and say, I want to start doing this thing,
mm-hmm.
it takes a while to build up that experience, frankly, you know, even learning to be the temperament to be a good investor, the learning of what goes into that and how you get out of that, that's kind of a key part of the lesson.
Totally. And I think young boys, it's a testosterone thing, right? They're like, I want to get in the stock market, I want to make lots of money.
Right, right.
Well,
there's a reason that most of the trading desks are blokes, right? Because it's that testosterone thing. It's that kind of, you know, swing for the fences, the kind of the bravado, the macho stuff. That's kind of what historically, at least, and this is again a little bit of a cliche, except that it's borne out by the reality, which is it tends to be that kind of aggressive nature that gets you hired for those roles, almost by definition, despite the fact that we know that, as I said, so The Motley Fool published a book. It was by one of our former editors called Warren Buffett Invests Like a Girl. And for those who know Warren Buffett, the kind of key point of the book, and not enough people read it, the point of the book was that Buffett's investing traits are actually considered feminine traits. Again, for the generalization, he's more closely associated with a feminine approach to investing than a masculine approach to investing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the world's fourth richest man, the most successful self-made investor ever. Like, this is a guy who's done it by basically investing the way women do.
Buy and hold, right?
Right. Rather than the kind of Wall Street, you know, get
sell
out
buy.
There and yeah, lots of trading and lots of risk-taking and carrying on. And that's kind of the... That's the total irony. All these blokes out there saying, I'm going to be like Warren Buffett. It's like, well, if you're going to do that, you kind of want to think about some of those feminine traits that are more considered feminine that actually make much more sense in that kind of context.
Yeah.
Hey, so as we finish up, we've talked a little bit about men leaning back and making some room. We've talked a little bit about understanding that If you're a family member or a friend of a girl or a lady, make sure you give them the opportunity and help them learn to the extent you can. Is there anything else particularly that, again, most of our audience is male? What can the blokes listening do differently, if anything, to help the women in their lives, or frankly, women not in their lives yet, be better investors, get involved, really value and benefit from what they've benefited from, which is the power of investing and compounding?
I would say don't patronise women about money. Something I saw in my household, I don't think my father meant to do this, but my mum was a keen as term deposit saver.
Yeah.
And for someone who, you know, baby boomer, you know, to do that, you know, she'd take chunks of money, put it in a term deposit, and then roll it over to the next one. So she's compounding. Nice. She's doing all the right things.
Reinvesting the interest. Yeah, awesome.
All that, but not taking the big risks that my dad was taking.
Yeah.
And I remember he would laugh at her.
Right.
And I kind of laughed at her as well, which I shouldn't have done. But what you should do is not patronize people like that, because she's actually doing something pretty good.
Right.
And then you say, well, you've made that step. What about thinking about maybe an ETF or something like that? I mean, and help educate them, because it's only through education and sharing knowledge that we're going to get to this kind of more equal level when it comes to investing between men and women.
That's awesome. That was going to be the last question, but I'll come up with another one because you made a really good point. Do you have, for the blokes listening who can speak to women in their lives, and more importantly for the women listening, because we really do want to reach out to them as well, how would you go about starting to invest? And this doesn't necessarily need to be a female thing rather than a male thing, right? But particularly you're talking to women now, or blokes who can hopefully then talk to women. As a female investor, someone who understands far more than I do, the female psyche and approach to investing, if you're going to say, here's a couple of steps to take, just so we can take something concrete away from the podcast, what should women do to start investing? If they're thinking about, if they listen to the podcast, or a bloke said, hey, listen to this, they hear what you're saying, it makes a heap of sense. Right, now what do I do? Can you give them a couple of steps?
Sure. I think women think that you need a lot of money to start investing, which isn't true. You can invest with $500 if you want. And you probably need to realize that you might fail, and that's okay.
Right.
So expect that you won't be brilliant at it from the get-go, but give it a try. And if you invest in something like an index fund or an exchange-traded fund, you know, you're instantly diversified across so many sectors. So the risk issue isn't a big one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the stock market could totally tank, but you know, you never know.
But it's also always come back, right?
That's the other thing. Always comes back. It's always going to come back. So I think it's one of those things you actually have to give it a try, but you need to educate yourself as well. And the best way you could do that is by reading my blog, missmoneybox.com.au.
Beautiful. Look at that. Perfect plug. I love it. Normally at this point, I would do a high horse, but I'm not going to, because Bronwyn has made more than enough salient points, and I'm not going to destroy it by being ranting, Liam. You'd be impressed to know. So, fools, I would encourage you, as Bronwyn already has, to go to missmoneybox.com.au. Can you subscribe to an email at that?
You sure can.
There you go. And you're also on Twitter at the same handle?
I sure am.
There you go. Miss Moneybox or missmoneybox.com.au. And that wraps us up. But before we go, don't forget you can subscribe to the Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast through iTunes or your favourite Android podcast app. And if you like what we're doing, and we hope you will, give us a 5-star rating, give Bronwyn some love on iTunes, and tell your friends. I'm sure they could use the little foolish straight talk and a little bit of Miss Moneybox straight talk as well. That's it for this week. Until next week, fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.